Welcome to Starfleet Universe On-Call. I'm Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. Over on SWP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Winterhouse joins me at TalkCast every Thursday night, starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. And search for call ID 17702 or SF on call or Starfleet Universe on call. You should find us there. Now, if you want the best online experience, you want to go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you'll be able to join the chat room there and hopefully have a nice discussion with people there. And obviously respond to anything I'm talking. And you actually get to see it live broadcast. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days, you can follow me on sfuoncall right there. Or you can also follow me on Paul Franz, PAUFRANZ. That's my personal account. There's no T in that. Also, Franz Games, which is my business account, FRANZ. GMES, and of course, again, there's no T in that. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Cole was busy working on art for the Orion Master Starship book. I think most of it was the War Destroyers. That's about it. Jean actually had some surgery on Monday. She's recovering fine. And, Steve Cole also went out to lunch with Steve Petrick. So, because Steve Petrick did finish up the MSB book. But moving onward to found on the online store for this week, we have the FedCom Asteroid Map Panels. Only goes for $8. It's two Asteroid Map Panels from the Battleships Attack product. And if you want to, just a reminder that these are not the same ones that came in the Romulan Attack product. So if you want to get those asteroid panels without buying the Battleship Attack set, or just want some additional panels, which I'm sure could go really well in any kind of play scenario that you want, which includes asteroids. They look really, really cool, and I would definitely recommend, if you don't have a couple of the panels, definitely pick them up. It's only $8. Come on, it's not that expensive. Moving on to the SWP Online tournaments, none running at the moment. There has not been an announcement for the next Sapphire Star tournament yet. When it comes to the online client, nothing much going on there. When it comes to library, on the other hand, there's been quite a few updates and fixes. From Frank and from Matt, both have been busy fixing those things for their campaign. I still have to work on, we're missing a counter for one of the ships, which I have to I have to add. Yeah, I forgot what it was off the top of my head. I have to check my computer here. But there's more ones. I'm pretty sure I already announced the Carnivons that Matt blasted in, so we have quite a few of those now as part of the client, especially the fighters, because I know that was important for them. There was a lot of emails that went flying yesterday. I didn't have a chance to actually read them. I'll probably read them either tomorrow or possibly Saturday. And when it comes to the FedCom library, no progress or nothing to tell about that. And with that, that is the news for this week. Okay. And it's me, the one all powerful, welcoming you, the Starfleet Universe on call. And tonight, we have Doug. How you doing, Doug?
I'm here. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Don't mind me. I'm just getting over to Twitch on my iPad just to Get things all set. And we're good. I told him I shouldn't do anything. Really? Whatever. Okay. Sorry. But yeah, we're gonna moving forward in the monster manual. I'm not sure if you guys heard the echo, but hopefully not.
What echo?
Yes.
What echo?
Okay.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, good. I thought you might have heard the echo from the iPad. I had to turn off the sound, that's all. Okay, but anyway, we have a few scenarios that I saw in the Monster Manual which look interesting, at least enough to discuss. And obviously, after we finish the Monster Manual, we'll move on to a new topic. But I really wanted to introduce people to all the monsters. And then I found these interesting scenarios which were a part of Russ's Monster Manual they created, which is I'm so glad he shared with us. Me and like yeah. Anyway, it's scenario, actually give me a sec. So I'll make sure people can see this. Which is scenario number SG31. It's called Intruder Alert. Actually, the interesting part about this one is it's a single player, but as you'll see right here, I can't select it. That's fine. There's no map. You just have all you need is an SSD. You can do you have an energy allocation form and a sheet of paper, and that's it. It's a really basic scenario. So this is one of those things, if you wanted to do, you could do it on your laptop. You could do it sitting on a plane as you're flying across the country or on a train. You know, just put it, I'm not talking about trains like the local metros. I'm talking about trains like going up and down the East Coast. So we have the trays just like planes and so forth that you can actually play by yourself in a limited space, which is I think quite cool. Here it is. The scenario uses the above sequence, abbreviated sequence of play, the allocation, the initial activities, record the location of analyzing the traps, we'll go about them. And at the same time, assign boarding parties as guards. And then the final activity, roll to determine the monster's location and whether it's been analyzed or trapped. Immediately after resolving the boarding party. And each turn in your final activity phase, player roll two dice one time to determine the monster went. This is determined by the chart below. Which, if you look at it, I saw that it looks pretty close to like a PF damage allocation chart. I don't think it is, but it looks darn close to it.
There were two things that struck me about this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was that the artwork reminded me that, gee, maybe this was inspired by a certain single name movie. That's not part of the Star Trek franchise.
That does the first letter of that with an A.
Maybe. Yes. Absolutely. And the second thing is it kind of made me think of like kind of like playing Advanced Minesweeper with your ship. Only your ship is the field of play.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that was my two takeaways on this monster, mm-hmm. or this yeah. monster scenario.
Oh, the scenario, yeah. I agree. It's one of the reasons I actually wanted to go over it just because, as you said, it brings up some interesting things about it. And again, as I said right at the beginning, which is the great thing about this is you can do it in a limited amount of space. You don't need a board. You don't need to get out counters and all that kind of thing. You still need dice.
In space, no one hears your crew members scream.
That is
you,
true.
Because it's Star Trek universe, and you can hear them over the intercom.
It says no. So the chart determines the type of system. The actual system box must still be determined. In the event of the sensor scanner and damage, that monster is always assumed to be the best undestroyed box. And in the case of excess damage, the monster attacks the topmost or leftmost undestroyed box. Player should arbitrarily... I'll have to wait for that. I was wondering if, when it comes to excess damage, if all your excess damage, if he destroys all your excess damage, your chip is bye-bye. Okay. Visual arbitrary number of boxes on the various systems. Allow the specific one involved to be identified by rolling a single die as followed. One of that type, obviously nothing. Two of that type, you know, simple 50%. Three, five, six, obviously. 7 or more, looks like none of the first. Leave the system unnumbered. Oh, okay, so there's a greater 7 or greater. This says use the die roll as 6 and choose the first 6. Okay, from the bottom rope to the top. The box of the monster is in. This turn is determined. The player must discover what interaction occurs. If there's no trap or analyze the box, it's destroyed. Ooh. If there's an analyzer, roll one die. And if the die rolls 1 or 2, the monster has been analyzed successfully. Traps in there but built. If this is the first successful analysis of the monster, if any event, the system box and analyzer are destroyed. Oh, okay. If there's a trap and an analyzer in the box, roll one die. If the result is 6 or greater, the monster is captured. The scenario is over, and the player wins. If the monster is not trapped, roll a second die to determine if the analyzer successfully analyzes the monster. In any case, the system box, the analyzer, and the trap are all destroyed. For every 3 successful analyses of the monster, not including the first one, one is added to the die roll for traps. Oh, okay. So there is a reason to analyze, which is to improve your chances of actually trapping the monster. Cool.
Plus, and it's the baseline for you to start.
What is?
Yeah.
What's the baseline?
You have to analyze it first before you can even try to trap it.
Right. That's what this game's always is to build. First step is to build an analyzer. A player allocates 1 point of power to an undestroyed lab box. Ooh, that could be bad. Or a control box. I'm assuming they go for the whole it's like the Andromedans. Andromedans don't always have labs. So you can use one control box as a lab.
There's a rule. They let you do that, yeah. If you have 3 or less, they let you use control spaces as labs.
Hmm.
I believe it was 3 or less.
Yeah. It says if the ship has less than 3 labs or damage reduces it to less than 3, control boxes may be used as labs for the purpose of building analyzers only. Additionally, use the control boxes as labs to build analyzers cannot increase the total number of labs beyond 3. And a ship has 2 labs and 6 control boxes can only build 3 traps a turn. Okay. Okay, it's 1 point. Okay. The produces one allies at the end of the turn. In the allocation phase. Okay. So that's at the beginning of the term. On that term, immediately, the labs in which the analyzers have been built are considered to have been used for all the ensuing turn and cannot have power allocated for emergency damage repair. Okay. Used for identifying seeking weapons or any other function. Hi. Train going past. I'm not sure you can hear that or not.
Not at all. Okay. Not one little bit.
Okay. I can hear it clearly. I assume it's probably my mic, which is good. I mean, it's pointing right at me. And
some of the sound. Whatever noise reduction thing you have is catching it. So.
That's good, too.
Probably.
Right. The analyzer can be placed in any system box on the SSD so long as it's identified. Okay. And in the initial activity phase of the turn it was created, the ship can produce as many analyzers as undestroyed labs with a unit of power applied. Analyzers can only, once placed, cannot be moved and remain active throughout the game or until the system box there is destroyed. In other words, the monster hits it. Ba-ba-ba. Mark the location of the analyzer of your SSD with a blue dot or some other recognizable symbol. Okay. Eventually, officer can build two analyzers a turn during an analyzer allocation without any requirement. Are you worried about the three boxes, the three labs? After the monster has been analyzed, the player may build traps. So you first have to have the monster analyzed before you can build a trap. Okay. Trap may not be built before the monster has been analyzed. Okay. Duh. I just realized that and read it. Okay. To build traps, allocate 2 points of power per trap built. You may build as many traps as the number of the highest undestroyed damage control box on the damn contract. If all the boxes of the damn contract have been destroyed, the player may still build one trap a turn by allocating 2 points of power. Okay. So, let me place in any system box that analyzer, during the initial activity phase, just like when you can place the analyzers. The building traps will tie a portion of the ship's damage control system for that turn. Only shield repairs can be made if the entire damage control is used to build traps. Less than full damage, then you can. Right, okay. And then, of course, legendary engineer could build one trap per turn during the agile location without any energy requirement. Traps and analyzers can be placed in the same box on the same turn, but no more than one of each may be placed in any system box. Repairing a destroyed system box that had an analyzer or trap, and it will not repair the analyzer and the trap. Okay, that's something explicit. Okay, the ship is destroyed in a solitary scenario when all the system boxes other than shields are destroyed, including damage control, sensors, scanners, and excess damage. This is a change from the normal destruction as a result of monster's interaction. Note that in a scenario where the monster is a random element or a balancing factor, the ship would be destroyed normally by enemy fire. Okay, so basically, even if all the excess damage is destroyed, the ship is not dead. Which makes sense. Okay, then they have different variations for the scenario. Please hit your comments. I'll read this real quick. A true monster for all seasons. Interesting. It reminds me of a movie I like watch. It's called A Man for All Seasons, which is about St. Thomas More and King Henry VIII and their interactions. And, of course, St. Thomas More gets hung in the end. So,
oopsie.
No, he's not hung. I'm sorry. His head cut off.
Yeah. He gets dead.
Oh, he definitely gets dead. That's why I read that. It's like, okay, wait a minute. It can be added to virtually any lore scenario to create an element of uncertainty and, in some cases, outright panic. Do not hesitate to come up with your own rules for this monster. When adding it to a scenario, the monster is highly useful as a handicap to a stronger player facing a weaker player. Ooh, that is a neat idea. I definitely like that idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to deal with that while some other guy's trying to blow your ship up.
Right. And as I mentioned, it'd be a neat way of balancing the scenario where you have a stronger player playing a weaker player. You know?
Yeah, one guy's got a nice normal ship and the other guy has space herpes. Got it.
But yeah, I think that's cool. And as I said, it's a good kind of a traveler's game, you know?
Yeah, if you're stuck on a big transport, like a cross-country train or airplane or something, yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even need dice to play it if you have a random generator app on your phone.
Right. Oh, well, yeah, because I have one of those on my phone and... It should be here. Right there.
Just saying.
Which is that I got one on my watch. Roll.
So yeah, there is that. It could be a good handicapping thing, yeah.
Yep. Hey, I rolled a 1.
Of course, you know what could be really mean is if, like, you analyze it and capture it, and you just have a down shield on your opponent, and you just beam it to their ship and let them deal with it too.
Oh, hey, that sounds like a great variation.
That'd be rotten.
Reminds me of Trouble with Tribbles.
Yep. That was the next one. that was the very next place I was going with that.
Well, this is a little more difficult than Tribbles, I think.
No, Captain, I couldn't just put the Xenomorph into cold hard space where it would still survive. I transported it to the Orion ship right before he cloaked and disengaged.
Actually, it was the Klingons.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
And yes, I do remember the episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure.
I'm just throwing it into a slightly different context.
Understood. Well, definitely, I think it's an interesting scenario to play. And it's the rules are pretty simple. You know, I think it's something you. I think, given the chart, I think for the most part you can memorize the rules, because the rules are relatively simple, especially if you're not dealing with, even if you are dealing with legendary science officer or engineer. What? Sorry, the locals in here. What? You gonna come up? No. Okay.
Yeah, mine is. Mine is right here between me and the computer. Scratch me. I demand scritchies.
Go play with him. Hoping to play with the other cat.
That or someone's out because I shut the door to the room. I don't know.
And what's the one that I sent you? I know. Okay, there's that. Is that the one? Yeah, it is the one. Fire in the Deep. It's definitely one I wanted to talk about just because I know that Gary, but it's very interesting in this one, just because it's using the Juggernaut as an actual empire.
Mm-hmm. And they give ships for the different classes, yes.
Yeah, and I apologize. I forgot to read the description of the scenario when it comes to where it is, because I thought it might be the one where one of the Hive ships basically got attacked and was destroyed. It's because the Tholians might have fled to them. In this, they remain true, although obviously not in the way that the Tholians had intended, to their genetically reprogramming and single-mindedness of purpose. Not all of these expeditions would reach their destinations. More than a few disappear. The usual Centauri response still allows the communicators with the dispatch a second expedition. Of necessity, due to the distance involved, decades might pass before the expedition could be called lost. Since sending messages at all required the Nest ship or a Hive ship to stop dead in space to make a transmission burst. The Alpha Octant became aware of the situation by studying records captured from the defunct Seltorian expedition outside the Holdfast space. Even the Tholians were unaware of the extent of the Seltorians' operations in pursuit of them, although they had feared what such was possible. The Tholians recovered from the burning torch of Vengeance expedition, were, as might you expect, incomplete. While they indicated the Seltorians were making a major effort to track the Tholian survivors, they did not actually indicate just how many Hive or Nest ships might have even then be in service, or even on their way to the Milky Way galaxy, or how many more might have been under construction, or much else about what was happening in the Tholian home galaxy. On the plus side, the records indicated the Seltorians were not directing a concentrated invasion against the Milky Way, and that not all dispatched Hive and Nest ships were reaching their destinations. One of the recovered reports dealt with Nest of Monarch Butterflies expedition, SL 280, in caps log number 39, regarded as a reasonably complete and accurate, as it was placed on a report of a surviving ship. Another report dealt with the presumable fate of the Star Redemption expedition, presumed because there were no known survivors. Okay. So this is one of those big scenarios, because you got one Hive ship, which is the Star of Redemption. You got, looks like, 1, 2, 3 Sartorian heavy cruisers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 destroyers, and then 3 looks like large freighters. Right, and they're facing a Juggernaut dreadnought, a heavy cruiser, a light cruiser, 2 destroyers, and 2 frigates. They're opposite ends of the map. You got 0522 versus the Juggernaut, which is in 3507. So they're pretty much opposite corners, a little bit off from the corners. So that's because they want to set up between within the five hexes of the of those corner hexes. Well, the starting hexes. Okay, the Juggernauts. And when it comes to Shriek Missiles, the Juggernaut's force has a total of 10 Shriek Missiles available. The Juggernaut player must assign these to the ship, but no more than four ships may have a Shriek Missile. To say the least, okay, did he have them? Yeah, this is... This is the beta, but... don't mind me. I did not check to see if... Yeah, here it is. Okay, this is the battleship. This one is the Dreadnought. So, let's look at the Dreadnought for a moment. We've got... One, two, three, four. Five, six. Phaser fours. Still have a 100 box rotating shield. And it looks like it has over total of 34. Phasers, and these are the Shriek missiles here, so it can hold up to 16 Shriek missiles. Wow. You got 40 box side shields here, you got 60 box shield up the front, and then the sides are 30 boxes. And it is a 1.5 movement cost ship. Nice little bugger. I like it. The scenario only gives one. What's that? 10. Okay. What is it, you goofball? No, you can't have my cup. He might jump up at any moment, just to warn people who are watching. There he is. I love you. Are you gonna move? Can you please stop standing on my shoulder?
Is he trying to perch on you?
Yeah. Okay, hold it. I need to get you up. There. Sorry. Then you got the heavy cruiser, which has only what, four phaser fours? And a total of 24 phasers. Most of them are phaser ones. I'm just look at how many phaser threes we have. 2, 2, 2, 2. That makes 8. So you have phaser threes. And 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 8. And another 2 phaser ones. So 10 phaser ones. And has ability to have launch 2 Shriek missiles. There's a light cruiser. Again, you got enough phase. You got two phaser fours. Now, phaser fours, they take what, 2 points of power?
I believe.
Okay.
More than a regular phaser.
Oh, I know it was more than a regular phaser, but I wasn't sure it was 2 or 4. Man. And this is, yeah, the light cruisers, two turns cost aren't movement. One, two, three, four, five. So that's four, sorry. Four by six, right? Four times six is 24. Which means it's hot warp. Okay, cool. And then last and certainly not least is the destroyer. There's only one phaser four. Was it? One, two, three, four, five, six phaser ones, and another six phaser threes. That's worth 105 points, which I understand because you got 20-point shield at the front, you got 16 on the side, 12 on the rear. Shield number three and five. Actually, it's armor. And then, of course, you have your rotating shield. I was just noticing that the destroyer, one of the smallest ships. Okay, they have a frigate. Yeah, the frigate. Let's look at how much this one is. It's worth 80 points, but the explosion strength of the frigate is 75 points. The destroyer, 111. The light cruiser has an explosive strength of 222 points. Heavy cruiser, 333 points. The dreadnought is, where is it? Dun, dun, dun. I don't see it. Dun, dun, dun.
I'm sure it's a lot.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
And
I
you don't want to
do.
be close to these things when they go boom, huh?
Oh, no, not at all. I do not see it. And how about see they launched on the battleship? Ba, ba, ba. Okay, it doesn't have it mentioned here yet. I'd have to probably look up the ship description. But can you imagine getting just one of the destroyers, which is only 100 points of damage, have him do a suicide run on you. So, to say the very least, you don't want to keep your ships right next to each other or
Just a
on a large
destroyer. Go
stack.
ahead. Yeah, the answer is no, you don't want to be close.
No,
Now, what is the limitation on their explosion radius? Is it like standard or is it like extended?
my assumption is they're standard. It's just that they have a very large explosive strength versus, normal ships.
Well, the other downside of that is that it should actually kind of make you want to spread them out. Because if it is, then you don't want that sucker exploding right next to your other ships.
Right.
If they
Even
blow up any of your
the
boats, they're
juggernauts
like
themselves.
the damn shield. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So whoever's controlling the dreadnought, those guys is probably going to want to, unless they're prescribed by the automatic rules or something, they might want to stagger their formation, so to speak.
Ooh, I just saw the number. The dreadnought, 500 points.
That's why you don't want to have it explode right next to all your other ships.
No, you don't. There it is. And for the ballast ship, 750.
Wow.
Actually, that's one thing I've not looked at for a long time, which is an explosive strength, which is how it, if a ship explodes, what are the damage? Because I know, obviously, range zero is full strength. Range one, is that half strength?
I don't know. I don't have a copy of the rules anymore.
Yeah, see, let me...
It's one of those. The original rule was out several hexes. I think four or five hexes, something ridiculous. And it went down by each radius of hexes that you went further out. But then in the last edition they published, I think they cut it down to like two. Like full strength at zero and half at range one or something like that. But I don't recall. You'd have to look that one up. If you have your rule book handy,
bring up right now. I've got my my PDF version. Self-destruction. Let's go for that. There it is. Okay, this one CF. Let's see, they have the relative. Hey. No. Okay, got the... Okay, multiple explosions. If another ship is the same hex, an exploding ship and is destroyed by the explosion, add its explosion strength, the basic strength. Ba-ba-ba. Oh, okay, there it is. Let's see if I can find that. Okay, it says D4.40. There it is. Active destruction when the is destroyed the bum bum bum. Fine. Okay. Two basic shows the base is 9 points, so the last explosion affects only the hex containing the exploding units. If the BES is 10 points or more, affects the hex containing the exploding units and six hexes surround the radius one. And the BES is applied to every unit within the explosion zone on the facing shield. So, okay, according to this, that if the BES is greater than, is 10 points or greater, it has an explosion radius of one hex. And it looks like full strength. Okay, that's definitely a rule change. I'm pretty sure in the Commander's Edition, it actually was a reduced strength at one hex. Or maybe it was... I could have sworn it was like... Zero was full strength. One was half strength. And two was quarter strength. Something like that. In the original Commander's Edition.
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I keep thinking for some reason it was either four or five hexes radius total. Mm-hmm. And it just went And I think 0 and 1 was full strength. And then, and like you said, it just goes down by each radius afterwards. But, yeah, that's one for looking up, I guess.
Oh, yeah. But definitely, this looks like an interesting scenario for those people who like the Dragonauts and want them to play them as an empire. And that actually, that brings an interesting question, which is, how do you play that? You've got basically a ship, which is a high explosive value. In other words, if you keep them too close together, and they get destroyed to the point where they get blown up, it might destroy or at least damage your other ships that are right next to it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be one of those things that I think you would want to keep.
That's a problem for all the SFB ships, really. And it's a matter of scaling. I mean, it does a lot of damage when it explodes. But on the other hand, it would take a lot to make one of them go boom in one shot. So if one of them's getting crippled, not that out of the realm of possibility that, you know, it would just be separated from the squadron pretty easily.
Oh, yeah.
Before it goes boom.
Agreed. And the obvious thing is that the Juggernauts, their explosive strength is way higher than any normal ship these days. This is after they updated with the Captain's Edition, because I still remember with the Commander's Edition for the Andromedans, what you would do is you would add all of the energy that was in the panels to the strength of the explosion. So if you had like 100 points of damage, you know, 100 points of energy in your PA panels, and your, let's say, base got blown up, that's 100 more points to the strength, explosive strength of the base.
Boom.
Oh, yeah. I actually played a scenario where I was flying the Andromedan base, which sucks. The big thing about the Andromedan bases, they have no phaser fours. They only have TR beams. So, it's like, come on, why do we have phaser fours?
It's not a bad thing. If you want to make things go boom.
Yeah, which is what happened. I think it was the feds that just overloaded photons, just completely just blew it to heck. And then I had to announce.
Well, yeah, that's what happens when they eventually discovered the rapid transport networks and they get to where the bases are. They go boom. Because by that time, the galactic powers were all really good at making bases go boom.
True. But, yeah, the one thing I had to do in that scenario is I had to announce catastrophic damage, because I looked at how much damage he was about to do, and I had all these ships inside of the base. So I transported them all out. Anyway, I could, with transports or DizDev or whatever, all of them, you know, because it was an emergency, collateral damage. And I went through those, allows you to do crazy things, which normally wouldn't be allowed, you know, because it's out of sequence.
Well, catastrophic damage has its own rules about that. So. There you go.
it's part of the
Death Star is exploding. You have the Death Star is exploding, and you have plenty of time to drag Dad onto the shuttle. There you go. Okay, cat. The keyboard is not meant for your butt.
So he's trying to sit on the keyboard?
She is, yeah. Wow. Well, she wasn't trying. She is. She was doing it.
And you don't even have a laptop. Actually, you do.
No, I do. But this is one of the desktops.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen my setup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. But I know the kitties like laying on the keyboards and laptops because they're warm.
Yeah. No, she's just like up here because she wants attention. Mm-hmm. And sitting there is basically, if she's sitting the wrong direction, her tail goes across the keyboard. So, there you go.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Flame in the Deep. After the success of Operation Unity, the Galactic Intelligence Agency, GIA, along with intelligence agencies of other empires involved with, had a wealth of captured Andromeda data files to review. Not all of them were easily transcribed, and at the end of the Air Force records, information were being painstakingly extracted. No Rosetta Stone have yet been found that helped to ease the task. Among the files that were converted were records of Andromeda contacts, not all of which could be identified incidents with the Milky Way galaxy or the Magellanic Cloud. One of these was a record of an incident with someone attacked an Andromedan relay base on the Galactic Transit Network. It is not clear where the base was located, other than somewhere in the deep reaches of space between galaxies, or who the attackers were, or even when the incident occurred. Andromeda time codes haven't yet to be directly attributed to any galactic time codes. The following was introduced into simulators at Starfleet Academy sometime after Y-209. So let me look at the setup, which is Andromeda satellite base, an intruder with 3 Vipers and a Quarter and a Python. And then the Juggernaut player would be has a heavy cruiser, a destroyer, and 2 frigates.
Oh, wow. I heard that one. You said you had a train in the background. I heard it that time. Unless it was here.
Yeah, I live like a mile from the train tracks.
Yeah, well, I know that feeling. We have train tracks running past here too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like when I was living in Harrisburg, like literally right across from the train tracks.
Understood. Yeah, I've ever since moved into the Reading area, we've always been like a mile or so from the train tracks, you know, because we lived in Satan Spring, and then we moved west to Wernersville. And actually, if I really want to, there's like 5 minutes I can walk across the train tracks and go to the Wernersville train station. Now, the train station is closed, but it's still a historic building. So they have a museum there, which they open up, I think, like once or twice a week. You know, I've never been there. I really should go because it's right close by. You know, it's one of those things. I'm sure everyone out there has experienced this, and that is where you live someplace and you really don't go see the touristy things, you know, go to the museums and go to whatever.
Yeah, because you live there.
Yeah, because you live there, exactly. It's like, why would I want
to? Yeah. Why would I want to go to Hershey Park? God damn it!
That's a different story.
I just drove past it twice today. The last 2 days, yeah.
Like, haven't been to Hershey Park for a while now. Got it. Took the kids at least 2 or 3 times to Hershey Park. This is before they expanded to where it is now. You know how much they still have some water parks, the lazy river, that kind of thing. You know, my kids, they enjoyed it. I enjoyed it too, because the great thing about Hershey Park, you could be there the whole day. You know.
Yeah.
And you actually had trees and actually had shade compared to there's a place, it was an amusement park up near Allentown. I forget.
Oh god, yeah. Uh-huh.
Dorney Park.
Yep.
And that's one big concrete slab.
Yeah.
You know, it has lots of great rides. I'm not into rides. But, you know, if you want to just go on rides and that's all you want to do, that go do that. And also, of course, the great thing about also Hershey Park is right outside the gates. What do you got? The Hershey Museum. Which invariably we actually stop by. We'll take like the one ride about the history of chocolate, you know.
Did you know that they actually hold on a second, I got allergies kicking in here, I'll be right back.
Okay.
I'm sure nobody wanted to hear me blowing my nose there. But did you know that they actually have, if I remember correctly, they have machines that blow the smell of chocolate out of the factories just for the tourists in the summer?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's like growing up here, sometimes you would get that smell of chocolate if you're near it. And I did not know that until like a few years ago. So,
Yeah, I was surprised because it reminds me of Fells Point in Baltimore. There's this one place that's it's a bar, but also it serves food, and you can smell it everywhere you go. Because you know, they have a fan that's blowing it out, all this wonderful smell, out into the street.
Yeah, they want you to get hungry.
Yeah.
They want you to get... Yeah, you came in for a couple beers? Yeah, here, smell our wonderful food. Yeah.
Birth those
we
muscles.
We hope that you have problems with impulse control.
That's one thing. I only went to Birth of Muscles once at Fells Point. I told my brother that when he invited me to go, and it's like, oh, I've never gone before. It's like, you've never gone before? It's like, yeah, I've never gone before, Dave. The only place I still remember was, it was like this one place, they dealt with all kinds of drunks and so forth. They're used to it, which they sold these meatball subs, and what they would do, they'd have the roll. Then they hollow out the roll and put the meatballs in the hole. So that you wouldn't have to worry about it making a mess. You could just, you know, hold like a cone and just eat it that way, you know.
Nice.
It was a great idea. I love the idea.
Did you? So good news and bad news?
What's the bad news?
Well, did we mention it last week or not that they canceled the one event?
Yeah, the big blowout, the SAB event.
Yeah, very sad to see that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Too, I couldn't make it no matter what, because the problem is, He picked exactly the wrong dates to run it.
Yeah. My big deal is just the cash. I can't afford to go there this year. But then again, I haven't been able to afford to go pretty much anywhere like that since we stopped going to Origins. I just haven't had the spare cash for doing that. On the other side of things, hey, look, Gamers is still going to be going on this summer.
Yes, it is.
And I
Well,
still need a schedule from somebody named Paul.
can't imagine what the last name of this Paul person is.
France. Mr. France. Yeah.
Get
It
me
could
started
perhaps
on
be
that.
helpful. Yeah.
Oh, understood. And thank you for reminding me.
I only remind you every gosh darn week. Pretty
A
much.
one of the graphical artists that I worked with back in the days of Primavera Systems, the first place I worked out when I got out of college. Back then, I like wearing a leather jacket. I got a nice leather jacket, which I love wearing it. But what the person did was did a Photoshop job and took Henry Winkler's body, in the with the leather,
Oh, good God. And you
I
put your
put my
face on it.
face on it, so I was the Franz. Hey.
Got it.
Yeah. Anyway, I think, why don't we just wrap it up for the evening? We'll definitely come up with a more extensive a topic next week, I promise, for everyone involved, including myself.
Could it possibly include what we're gonna do for gamers, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe.
It's a random thought. That would be
That's a good
nice.
idea.
Okay.
I have to
So,
sit down on
yay.
that.
Yeah. Well, if you want to pop up some weekend, we can do some work on the computers. Check out the setup stuff. Maybe we can figure out what's causing your thing to reset itself every time. I don't know.
Yeah,
Who
actually,
knows?
one thing I would love to solve, and I gotta talk to, I might have to talk to tech support for Rogue Amoeba, which is the makers of the software I use, or see if I can put it up with the Mac Geek app. It's a great podcast, and they might have an idea of why this is occurring. My guess is they're gonna say, well, the problem is you upgrade the Sonoma, because there's some sound issues with this version of the Mac OS S. So hopefully they can fix it. Anyhow, Doug, why don't you have a good night?
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Paul.
Okay, see you. So, tonight we went through not that many monsters, but we went through some monster scenarios. I think the coolest one, obviously, is the Juggernaut and looking over those ships and finding out they're basically big, huge explosions. Just moving around because, wow, that's all I gotta say. And especially with the current rules, if it's within one hex, it's full strength. So the destroyer would do 111 points of damage to any ship right next to it. Doesn't have to be in the same hex, it can be just range one. So, say the very least, that's nasty. And definitely, I think Doug and I both agree that after it gets damaged, you just want to spread, get away from everybody else before it gets just completely blown up. Because I'm sure that's what the opponent is going to want to do, is just completely blow it up. Of course, then you could try to just do a suicide run and see if you can make it. Maybe. Anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night. Excellent.